So coming up now is prepping for a liquid-cooled transmitter. I got Don Backus here from Rohde & Schwarz, and he's got a vast career, so I won't need to go through all of it. But here's Don.
Thank you very much. I will be relatively quick, and nothing I will talk about will cause your tower to fall down. So I'm pretty sure. I've got to look at the rest of the slides. There we go. That's the animation. Everybody loves animation. My name is Don Backus. I'm account manager for radio transmitters for Rohde & Schwarz. Having joined the company July of last year, coming from 5 years at BE prior to that, and then 13 years at Enco Systems. And then before that, I spent a lot of time in radio, both sides of the microphone, did some engineering, and was a general manager for about 10 years in Northern Michigan. But as they say, enough about me, let's talk about Rohde & Schwarz. Just a real quick corporate overview, if you have not heard much about our company, and most people who have generally don't associate us with radio transmitters, and that's okay. We've been around for about 80 years, a little more, established in 1933 in Munich. It is an independent family-owned company with 60 wholly owned sales and support subsidiaries around the world and net revenues of over $2 billion a year. So we've been pretty fortunate in that regard. It's a vertically integrated company with over 98% of all of our products actually manufactured in our own factories in Germany. And that slide is slightly out of date. It is actually an employee count of 11,000 with 600 in North America right now. And we do a lot of different things in different parts of the electronics industry. The company is 100% owned by the descendants of Dr. Rohde and Dr. Schwarz. It is an independent company with no dependence on financial or capital markets or private equity. And really, when has private equity ever hurt the broadcast business? Yeah. It's a very stable company, and we have the highest R&D reinvestment in the industry at between 17 and 18%, and a very long-term focus on customer relationship and support. I won't go into any of these other than the thing on the right is kind of cool. That is one of our products that is a millimeter wave scanner you might start seeing at the airports soon. Instead of those plastic things where you stand in and do that kind of thing, it's a platform and you just stand on it. It's open air. It's very cool, and there's a video on our internal website that shows you can run 34 people through that thing in 60 seconds if they know what they're doing and the security people are on top of their game. None of which actually really happens in real life, but anyhow, so we have a lot of things going on, a lot of test equipment, obviously, a lot of military radios, communications, and things like that, and of course, television transmitters that a lot of people know us for from Repac. There we go. This is our headquarters in North America. This is in Columbia, Maryland. It's about 15 minutes west of the Baltimore airport, and that is where we headquarter a number of things, including technical support and a parts depot for our transmitter lines. Other facilities in North America, a lot on the West Coast because there's a lot of things going on over there on the electronics industry. Put this picture in just to show what the service lab looks like in Columbia. Yeah, it really looks like that. It's like it's out of a science fiction movie. It's pretty cool. And you have to wear the lab coat to go in when they're fixing things, and it's pretty slick. We have 50 service and support employees there working two shifts, and two on-site service teams based out of there as well. And again, parts and support all provided from there. So let's talk about preparing for your liquid-cooled transmitter. Let's get wet. Liquid cooling does not require more preparation than air-cooled. In fact, I'm going to argue less because we're going to get through this session in less time than it would take if I was going to talk about air cooling. But it does require some different preparation. Now, most of what I'm going to present in this info is based on FM liquid-cooled transmitters, although most of this stuff applies to television as well. It's just that my job title is radio guy, so I'm the radio guy. Everybody pretty much understands what is involved in installing an air-cooled transmitter, getting the site prepped for that. You have to hit the clicker harder. Run electric power, air handling, air conditioning, filtering, ducting. and plenty of it, and make room in the transmitter building. Again, plenty of it. There are some commonalities between liquid cooling and air cooling as far as site prep go. Electric power service, RF plumbing, a good solid structure. It's not good if your roof flies off. Doesn't matter whether it's liquid cooled or air cooled. You don't want to get wet from the elements. And audio inputs and processing and all that good stuff. But again, failing to plan is planning to fail. And we're very big on recommending and almost insisting, in fact, that you do some planning before you jump into this. First, let's do some we're going to do some definitions in this. What is liquid cooling? What about HVAC? Is there a difference in the amount of space required? And what different tasks do you need to do? This is a slide that I put together that shows a simplified air-cooled solid-state transmitter. We'll start with a device. It could be your transistor. And this is how air cooling works. We blow air across it and push the hot air into the unit that it's in. Then we push it from the unit that it's in into the cabinet. Then we push it out of the cabinet into the room. And we push it out of the room into the outside. Sometimes we'll pull that air, sometimes we'll duct that air, but effectively that's what always happens. Liquid cooling is a little bit different. It's simpler. We'll start with the same device, but we'll use a liquid-cooled heat sink in place of the fan, and we'll draw the heat away from the device, and we'll transfer it to the liquid coolant, which we'll then transfer outside of the building altogether, skipping having to worry about the unit, the cabinet, or the room, and get it right outside. And liquid transfers a lot more heat than air with less flow volume. Air needs to flow 3,000 times faster volume-wise than liquid to remove the same amount of heat. So when you think of liquid cooling, do you think of this? Because this is high-powered AM transmitter of its day, liquid-cooled. Or maybe you think of this, which is a gorgeous picture. This is WLW in Cincinnati. But that was then. I mean, these days, most television transmitters are liquid-cooled, as am I. And the liquid cooling technology is making its way back into radio, but with current closed-loop designs, not the open-loop design that you see here with fountains and evaporation and contamination requiring huge cooling lagoons, cool though they are. This is how we do it today. This is liquid-cooled on the 9000 series, the THR9, and also on our television series as well. And liquid cooling allows us to provide higher power density, more efficient operation, very low room heat dissipation, a very highly efficient design, less maintenance, and literally a silent operation. HVAC requirements vary a lot between air-cooled and liquid-cooled. We've got an example here of a 20-kilowatt, I believe this is a 20-kilowatt IBAC transmitter running at minus 10. The average efficiency for a HD radio transmitter in the air-cooled world is about 50%. And then when you take the cooling components, the air conditioning system, etc., and put it into it, that brings that efficiency down by 5 to 15%. And so that leaves you with a resulting average efficiency, including cooling, of about 35 to 45%. On the liquid cooling side, our THR9 is 55% efficient at HD minus 10. And there we go. The required cooling components include the pumps, the heat exchanger, and the hoses. Don't forget the hoses. But that impacts efficiency by between 1 and 3%, which gives you a resulting system efficiency, including the room cooling, of 52 to 54%, which doesn't sound like a lot. It's 13%. But at the same time, when you look at the power bill, that's $140,000 over 10 years. And that's just the electric power. That doesn't count any of the rest of the stuff. And in some areas, regional utility companies offer rebates, discounts, or energy credits to customers who install more energy-efficient systems, including fully liquid-cooled transmitters like the THR9. So the three basic things you have to look at when you're planning a site is, where are you going to put the transmitter in the building? Where are you going to put the pump stand? Because that's a pretty vital part of this thing. And where do you locate the heat exchanger? And what I've got here for pretty much one or two more slides like this, and the rest are pretty much pictures, and we'll talk about some of the actual site installs that have been done out there to give some real information as opposed to some doofus with a slide. But it is important to mention that the increased power density does save you a lot of space. Output power in a 19-inch rack, which is 7 square feet, up to 40 kilowatts FM, up to 26 kilowatts of HD radio. And the amount of heat dissipation in the room is less than 800 watts, which is slightly more than any two of us standing around the transmitter working on it. Everything else either goes up the stick or out to the heat exchanger. So it's just like air-cooled installation, except it's a much smaller footprint, and it's much cooler. This is my pun. I always try to throw one in. This is a flow chart, and literally, when you're talking liquid cooling, it is a flow chart. Sorry. I apologize for that, but it just hit me at the side of the head. I said I had to do it. So what you've got here is, we'll start with the transmitter, and you're seeing liquid output from the transmitter to the bleeder valve, which we'll talk about, from the bleeder valve to the heat exchanger, from the heat exchanger to the pump stand, from the pump stand to the bleeder valve, because there's a bleeder valve both on the intake and the outtake, and from the bleeder valve back to the transmitter, and as they say in the old Brett commercials, rinse and repeat. Because it's a closed loop, there's no evaporation, there's no opportunity for contamination to get into the system. It's a loop. So we install the transmitter. Find a spot on the floor where you want to put it. Attach your RF electric power and liquid connectors. They typically are, those connections are made from the top. Although it is possible to connect from the bottom, depending upon the specifics of your installation. If you're on a second floor, if you're up a ways, and you want to drill in from the bottom, that is definitely a possibility that this allows for. If the liquid connections are at the bottom, then the bleeder valves are internal to the transmitter, so you don't have to hang one up anywhere, because the bleeder valve is what is going to pull the little bubbles of air typically on installation, but make sure that no air gets into the system, and make sure that it gets bled out. The German word for a bleeder valve is an air scoop, which confused the heck out of me when I started selling liquid cooled transmitters, and the first thing you had to do is put an air scoop on it. It's like, really? But once I was educated, I understood it better. Accessibility from the front and the back is a requirement. You're going to want to be able to get into it from the front and be able to get into it from the back. Side access is nice. It's optional, but, it can be useful. Depending on location, mounting to or on concrete floor is fine. However, in some instances, like this one in Pensacola, where they occasionally will get water in the building, they put it on a 4x4. And then had the 4x4 on the concrete. So then again, if water can get into the room, raising it might not be a bad idea. And this is the same transmitter with the side panel off. So again, typically side access is not required. It did allow me to make some really cool videos when I was at this site last year. But if you do position the transmitter thusly, the side panels can easily come off, both sides come off, and can go back on easily. Then you install the transmitter. In this case, this one's in North Carolina. It's one of our technicians and the director of engineering looking at the remote control. And as with air-cooled transmitters, the less crowded the space, the less cramped it is, the easier it is to work there. So this is a workspace. When you have to go, you don't want it to be so tight that you can't maneuver. You want it to be open, lit, and airy. In fact, this instance, the transmitter is so quiet that the engineer occasionally has lunch in there because it's the quietest room in the transmitter building, including his mini refrigerator. And then, of course, once you've bought and installed one, you'll want your next transmitter to be liquid-cooled as well. As you can see, his second one is in the back, which was actually his first. That's his second one right there. So, okay. The pump stand is where we deviate a little bit from things that you've seen. A transmitter is a transmitter, but the pump stand is the rack where the pumps are. The big green thing is an expansion tank. So the largest thing that you see there does the least amount of work. It is strictly there for fluid expansion and contraction. It's an external pump stand. There are internal pump stands available. We'll look at that in a second. Redundant pump design. One assembly per cabinet. So per rack, per 40 kilowatt rack, you get one pump stand. If you're going 80 kilowatts, you get two of them. If you're in television and you're doing 106 kilowatts at the top of One World Trade, you get six different pump stands that sit next to each other. So that's the way the system's designed. And again, it's fully redundant so that one pump can handle the load if one of the other pumps fail, and they're hot swappable. They use about 200 to 400 watts power consumption. There are a lot of different ways you can install it. You see this one is just installed against the wall in the transmitter building. Each pump stand, the external pump stand, is pre-assembled. It's delivered on a pallet, so none of that stuff you have to do. You have to hook up electric, data, and the coolant. But otherwise, it's ready to remove from the pallet and install. So you run your liquid coolant hoses, electric power, and data connections. It's another picture of a different install. It can be installed anywhere in the transmitter room. This gentleman chose to put it right next to the transmitter. And you can see there's another view of the same one. Check the pre-taped area for installation. He taped out his plan so he knew exactly where things were going to go. And it is important to have an installation plan. Blue tape is optional, but proper grounding is not. Or if you choose, you can have the pump stand installed inside the transmitter itself. So you don't have to install it. It comes pre-assembled and delivered, built right into the transmitter rack. So that really all you need to do is run the hoses, the liquid coolant hoses from the pump to the heat exchanger outside. Everything else is already hooked up. And that works for certain power levels. It works at 10, 15, and 20 kilowatts. It does not work for our 30, 40, 60, or 80s. Because it wouldn't fit. Heat exchanger. The heat exchanger, you see things that look like this everywhere. I mean, they're you know, transmitter sites, they're grocery stores. It's a proven technology. And ours will vary in size by the power level, but there are options available for mounting. It's a redundant fan design. One fan in each cabinet is capable of handling the entire rack, the entire transmitter. So if one fails, again, you can continue operating with one. Nobody in the listening audience will know that you've lost a fan. You won't be going off the air, diminishing power. You'll get an email, which is kind of cool. Although it's cooler not to have to get the email. But one per cabinet, and they use up to 300 watts power consumption. Now, I got some notes both from some clients and from our support team, some things that I thought were interesting to point out. And one of our guys said, you should typically plan for a place to set the heat exchanger outside. It might be a new pad or an existing space, and then an ice shield above. We typically will use ladder rack to support the hose from the rack to the pump stand to the heat exchanger. Quick thing on the ice shield. I had someone in Orlando once look up to me and say, so you say this thing is redundant, huh? And I go, yeah. What if a icicle falls from the top of my tower at just the right angle to penetrate the heat exchanger and ruptures one of the pipes and coolant goes everywhere? What happens then? And I go, we're in Orlando, right? Does that happen a lot? He goes, well, but that's beside the point. What if it does happen? I go, okay. Ice bridge? And he goes, well, let's say it misses the ice bridge. Oh, okay. Yes, it would penetrate if it comes right at that angle. It will penetrate the stainless steel of the outside of the heat exchanger and possibly rupture a coolant hose. At which point the transmitter says, oh, my coolant pressure's down a little bit. I better watch this. Oh, it's going down a lot. Now it's time for me to orderly shut down the transmitter so no damage happens, and I'll send Randy an email. So, but the best part was there was a guy there from a TV station who had put in two of them already of our television transmitters, and he says, oh, for God's sakes, Randy. So he's my favorite guy. Power and control all come from the rack, from the transmitter itself, so those cables can lay in the ladder rack indoors and in seal tight outside, and then, of course, grounding is vital. So, more installing the heat exchanger, it is heavy, the largest size up to 700 pounds, so, you know, don't expect to have a couple of interns help you haul that puppy around. Typical installation site is outside, sometimes on the top of a building, sometimes on a pad. Leveling is very important, and we provide tools to help you make sure that it's good and level, because it's key to the longevity of the device, that it's attached well and that you don't have any shimmy vibrations or anything like that. No, that is not Randy. No, Randy doesn't have one of these yet. That's Britton Smith. He's in WYCT in Pensacola. He's a good guy. So you see the mounting base that is at the bottom of the heat exchanger. That's what's bolted onto the concrete, and then the heat exchanger is bolted onto the rack, or the base there. And again, most often on a concrete pad. And pouring concrete is fun. It's worth making the pitch. But if you already have a pad somewhere, some engineers choose to install on other materials. In this case, a set of 4x4s, a railroad ties, basically. But again, level and stability are keys. This particular installation in Idaho, the engineer, his first thought was that he wanted to install the heat exchanger at about the 8-foot level to make sure animals didn't get into it and that snow didn't clog it up. And then he realized that he'd have to be climbing a ladder every time he did anything ever, and it was a stupid idea. That comes back to planning. You know, think as far outside of the box as you want, but at some point in time, you know, when you act, make sure that you've considered all of the decisions that you make. This is another example showing the ice bridge. Running the liquid coolant hoses, you run the electric power and the data connections and port it into the building. Seal gaps or use conduit or PVC. Conduit isn't really required. UV isn't going to damage this hose, but occasionally some people choose to do it that way. And an ice bridge, again, can be very useful, depending on your location, and it's a relatively inexpensive protection. And north of a certain area, let's say Alabama, it's really cheap insurance. Don't install the heat exchanger in immediate proximity to your supply or exhaust air ducts. It distorts the operation of the system. You'll either run it too often or won't run it enough, depending on what else is in your rack. Inside that building, besides our transmitter, is a 20-kilowatt CCA. So it's generating some heat. So keeping it away from the ducts is a good thing for him. And the unit does not need to be sheltered, but a degree of protection from prevailing winds is good. And multiple heat exchangers can be located side by side, or they can be located on top of each other with appropriate brackets. This is a mountaintop site in North Carolina. It shows sheltering for both transmitters, heat exchangers. The hose. This is a cross-section of the 1.5-inch coolant hose, and you can see it's pretty substantial stuff. If you chose to, you could kill somebody with this bad boy. Well, you won't need a saw to kill him, but you will need a saw to get through the pipe. The pipe is rated, it's a commercial pipe, it's or hose, it's rated at 200 PSI. It never gets any more than 20% of that tops. So it's designed to last a long, long, long time. So how do you connect hose like that when you have to connect it to one of the pieces of equipment? This is our bracket for the hose installation. That's these are photos that are taken directly from our installation manual, which is a really good manual. I think it was written originally in English and then translated to German by our German team, because it's easier to go from English to anything else than it is to go from German to English and still have that natural kind of flow to it. So there's a real flow to the language, except for all the warning labels. The warning labels, they're bilingual, but I think they're awkward in all languages. And, you know, without going into detail, we're going to follow, just suggest that you follow specific instructions for connecting the host to the brackets. Don't be in a hurry. You know, take your time. But you see the ribs in there and the tightening tool. And then, in this picture, that shows the actual connector that will go to the piece of equipment. So the hose goes inside the bracket, but it goes around the entire lip of the flange there. And they're fittings that are designed specifically and machined specifically by us to be attached to the hose according to the directions. And when those directions and instructions are followed, leaks will be prevented both short and long term. Bleeder valves are placed at the highest point of the coolant loop. If you're coming in from the bottom, the bleeder valve, which you can see, I don't have a pointer. Oh, there we go. This is going to be a lot just to point at one little bleeder valve, but I'll do it. Right there. So that's the bleeder valve as it sits inside the transmitter. This will actually come in handy now. When the coolant is coming in from the top, the bleeder valve is up there. And there's, again, one in the incoming and one in the outgoing coolant tubes. And after the installation process, user access to the bleeder valve is something that's not required. So you don't have to put it on a nice wall that you can get to real easy. That can go up 8 feet and nobody cares. That'll be a good thing. So what the connections look like on the top, from the left, we have the coolant inflow, audio in conduit, RF, and the coolant outflow. Look at those brackets are, you know, incredibly sound. They're not going anywhere. There's not going to be any slippage. You install those right, and they're, you know, nothing's going to yank those bad boys out. AC power comes in from the back, so it's not shown on that slide. Here's the pump stand. Again, coolant in, coolant out. And you just follow the directions and don't hurry. It's not a race. It's not a competition. Generally. We supply a coolant fill pump to allow you to easily fill the system originally with the supplied liquid. It is a 6139 mix of deionized water and Antifrugen N. It is premixed, it is ready to go, and it is designed not to leach any kind of metals or have any reaction to any of the metals or other surfaces that are within the cooling system. We actually cut heat sinks into the, channels into the heat sinks, so we're running fluid within the heat sink itself to make sure that all of the devices, both in the power supplies and the power amplifiers, are equally cooled, and that there are no localized hotspots within each module. And one of the ways we do that is to make sure we use a reliable antifreeze compound that we've tested and that we're very familiar with. In the lower right hand side, you see a blue plastic coolant container. Keep them around just in case you've got room. Just if you have to ever drain a module to ship somewhere, you want to take the fluid out because it'll save you money on shipping. It also won't be as gooey. And run the cooling system for 24 hours or so to let the bleeder valves trap out any air bubbles. And then you crank it up. I mean, honestly, you connect your audio, data, remote control, follow the power up and initial operation instructions. And from this point forth, installation and commissioning of liquid cooled is, that part's done. The rest of the commissioning is essentially the same as air cooling. This is one of our guys in fact, a guy in Idaho. He says, I spent the most time thinking about where I would physically place the transmitter and the heat exchanger. limited space in our existing transmitter room, and the old transmitter was not being removed. So I ended up locating it in the middle of the room, which worked out very well because I found that I wanted access to all four sides, and I'm very glad to have it. This works because the transmitter footprint is not large compared to older transmitters. The factory engineer, support engineer assigned to me for the install contacted me first and was very helpful to answering a few questions and making a suggestion or two, which our guys are. I think he may have been surprised how few questions we actually had and how quickly we got it on the air. And now that it's on the air, it's great how quiet it is in the room. And that's with a CCA 20 kilowatt still running there. It's now quiet in the room. I'm not sure what he replaced. It may have been a Rolls-Royce jet engine or something. But he says you have to check the meters to know if it's running or not. And the decrease in heat dumped into the room is a big welcome change. The heat exchanger outside is just as quiet as the inside unit. He went from 20 tons of air conditioning load in that room down to one. So not only cost savings, but maintenance savings and headache savings. And then I know that my next THR9 install will go even quicker, having done it once, and he's looking forward to it. Then a couple of other quick notes from our support guys. People moving from an air-cooled system to liquid might have some fears about it being messy or difficult to work with, so I always stress how easy the system is and relatively maintenance-free. After the system is installed, it literally might be years until you see a drop of coolant again. And the biggest thing to get used to is the quiet in the room when you take all those blowers out. It's a lot nicer environment with so much less noise. What about contractors? A lot of people use contractors and integrators. Not as often in radio, but television almost certainly, because television is generally a bigger install. There's a lot more going on, and Repack is, you know, helping to pay for some of that stuff. But regardless of who does it, the same steps need to be taken. And Roden Schwartz can handle your installation from end to end or anywhere in between. Let's see what... How are we doing here? Oh, shoot. Okay. Ongoing maintenance. Real quick, this is what we want you to do. We want you to check the filter one time in its lifetime. We want you to check pH level and, level and pH value about once a year, and then check the fans and pumps every 4 years. Just take a look at them, make sure they're running good. Familiar with an air-cooled transmitter, you see there's a little bit more maintenance required there, especially when you include the HVAC. One unique configuration that I think is worth pointing out is our multi-TX, which allows you to put multiple transmitters inside the same rack. So if you want to have 220s or 410s in the same rack instead of 140, we can do that very easily, sharing the cooling system. There's a guy in Guam. Any guys on I Take Pictures of Transmitter Sites? On Facebook? Yeah, guilty pleasure. Guy in Guam has an FM20T and two FM10T transmitters in a 40-foot-long container. This is his transmitter building. Now, he owns it, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're fine transmitters. But I got to doing the math, and if he was renting space, he would be using 191 inches of linear width, and with the THR9, he would be able to do that in 23.5 inches. Do an N+1 configuration as well. That's what it looks like from the backside. Individual combiners, individual power distribution, one control system, one cooling system. Key benefits, between 3 and 50 kilowatts hybrid, 5 and 80 kilowatts analog. Minimized energy cost, 75% efficiency on the analog side. Excellent transmitter robustness, no clogged air filters. You're never off the air because of broken AC, no individual amplifier or power supply fans. Fully redundant cooling, silent operation, minimized service efforts, which means less work, and liquid cooling consumes a lot less electricity. That's our first FM transmitter. It went on the air in 1949. It was the first one in Europe. It's 200 watts sitting next to one of our 20 kilowatters right there. So we've been doing radio a long time, albeit not necessarily in the U.S. And then this is WNJU's new transmitter, One World Trade Center. It's the largest solid-state digital TV transmitter in the world. It's a six-rack Rohde & Schwarz THU9 EVO. It delivers 106 kilowatts. And as a result of repack, NJU and WNBC will eventually share the transmitter, multicasting both HD channels within their 6 megahertz bandwidth. We're also chosen for the ancillary equipment, cooling, like the combiners and such, and, check out the reflected power. 117 watts. That is a nicely tuned combiner antenna system. That's pretty sweet. We're responsible for the number on the left, which is 106.9 kilowatts or something, but that's a nice combiner. Anyhow, I will sum up. Make a plan. Decide where you're going to put the transmitter, where you're going to put the heat exchanger, where you're going to put the pump stand. And then route the coolant hoses, power, and data. Realizing that you're going to have less maintenance, you're going to have a smaller footprint, but you still want to make sure that your plan takes into account where everything goes. Implement the plan. Pour the pad for the heat exchanger. Physically install your transmitter, heat exchanger, pump stand, and the bleeder valves. Connect audio, RF, coolant, and power. Fill the system, let it bleed the air bubbles out, then crank it up. To mentally prepare, get used to the quiet. Expect to spend less time at the transmitter site, less time screwing around with the transmitter. Expect to spend a lot less time being the HVAC repairman. Expect a much lower electric bill. And take the credit for making the decision to go with liquid cooling, because nobody's going to give you that credit. Take the credit. And then I have a video that will show how we manufacture the transmitters. If I kill the audio, we can go to questions on that and just let this run in the background, and then everybody can go to the show floor and get my business card. So if that's muted, that should be fine. So any questions? No. It has not been our experience that it does. And again, we have over 10,000 liquid-cooled transmitters in the field. So we've got some expertise with the coolant, and we specifically chose the formulation that we did, for longevity. It's just music. It's just, I mean, it's not bad music, but the factory that the transmitters are manufactured in Tysnacht, employs about 1,300 people, and the town has 900 residents. It runs two shifts, and clearly it's a pretty high-tech facility. One of our guys described the factory. He said, we don't have a transmitter factory. We have a factory that happens to build transmitters, among other things. And I think that's one of the advantages we bring to the table, is that the same assembly line, the same assembly equipment and people can build a lot of different things, and do build a lot of different things. So we get the advantage of having technology that you might not have if you were just building several hundred transmitters a year, but the same technology that you would be able to put to effect if you were doing a whole bunch of test equipment and the like. And the off button.
Thank you. If you have questions for Don, he'll take them gladly in the exhibit booth.
Yeah.
We want to get you in there to start seeing what's going on. Just a few closing announcements here, and thank you, Don.